The meeting will now be called to order. May we please stand and pledge allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now is a public comment period. Anyone wishing to speak? We have one request, April Perimo.
This is the third time I've asked and have not received a reply from this county. PG&E's putting in a pipeline. They've claimed eminent domain. I've asked how they claim eminent domain since they're a private company. Second of all, I asked, does not the Williamson Act contracts override that? I still haven't got a reply. Let me explain. The Tea Party wants all power to come back to the county, all monies to come back to the county. The only way we can do that is if this council is willing to stand and fight for that power and fight for that money. We would rather have 25 more sheriff's department than anything the state wants. So that requires that you stand and fight, but you're not even giving me the information so we can stand and fight. We really need you to participate. Thank you.
Is there anyone else wishing to step forward?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Morning.
Mr. Chairman, fellow supervisors, not mine, but yours. Emerson Drake, Modesto resident, 24 years. I guess I've appeared in front of you a few times, three times. This is the third on this particular subject. My wife suggests that maybe it'll be like Snow White. The first time I was too late, the second time I was too early, and maybe this time it'll be just right. But we'll see. It's about campaign reform. You have the power here to set the standards for the county of Stanislaus. One of the things I'm requesting for you to do today, or to take into consideration and actually ask the county council to write up in legalese, because I don't pretend to be a lawyer, is that we have a $24.99 limit right now before it has to be reported. I'm requesting, for campaign contributions, I'm requesting that you raise that to $99.99, just like the city of Modesto, but more so like the state. I think that makes it easier for an average citizen to make a contribution, not a substantial, but a reasonable one, and not have to worry about the exposure. And I think that some people think it's silly, but their boss might not like who they support. And that doesn't seem unreasonable. $24.99 isn't much of a contribution, as you gentlemen know. You appreciate it, I'm sure. $99 to me is more substantial and more reasonable. Secondly, in order to avoid any concerns of impropriety, I think it would be great if we had a limit for the Board of Supervisors. This is one that would affect you individuals particularly, that you could accept all you want in the way of campaign contributions. There's nothing wrong with that. But I would like to see an individual limit of $1,000, a company limit of $2,000, before you're required to recuse yourself from a vote involving that company. We've seen, at least in the past, some extremely large contributions come in and seen those individuals vote for that contributor. To me, I think that just, to me, it's wrong. To me, I think it puts a suggestion into the air that's not right, and we're not trying to embarrass people or name names. The point is to rise above the standards that we have now, to hold accountability. I'm asking you to set a limit there. So you can still, I know it costs a lot of money to run these campaigns, but so we have a limit that you have to step back, if you will, and let the other individuals make the vote. Because as it stands right now, one contributor can make a huge one to somebody. They can still vote for the project, and you have to be concerned that if you don't go along, he might give that money to your competitor the next time around. It's just an honest concern of a voting citizen here. Third but not least, I would like to see, again, legalese, I'm not sure it's even possible, and I hope so, that we have elected officials here that are responsible for particular departments, and yet they can have their hands out to vendors to accept campaign contributions. Now, I personally think that's wrong. I don't think that any company should be allowed to campaign or go for a contract, we're talking millions of dollars for some of these single contracts, and turn around and supply money to the candidate that ran and got him the decision. Now, I know it's a four-person panel, and I'd be willing to sit down and talk to you about some of the decisions that have been made. Ones where we went with the more expensive vendor for reasons that weren't even part of the bid, and 2 years into the contract, they have not fulfilled that one section that got them the contract. So why not make it that if you want to, a contract with Stanislaus County, you can't contribute $4,000, $5,000, $9,000, set a limit. But I think it ought to be like $1,000. You could still get raised money for campaigns. Why would anybody want to come in? Doesn't it appear that you're purchasing those contracts? Whether it's a medical contract or whether it's a contract for services, and just use an example, and it's not based in reality, but what if Lee Lundgren bought her ballots from one company, the same company, and she doesn't, don't misunderstand, I'm just trying to find an example here, from the company that gave her $4,000, $5,000, or $10,000. That would seem to be inappropriate to me, regardless of what criteria is set up. So I'm asking you, gentlemen, to set a limit on those three. Empower the voters of Stanislaus County so they don't feel that just special interests have a say in county government. Okay, I ask you, too close to the last election, too soon afterwards. It seems to me, since we're talking redistricting and some other things, that maybe, just maybe, the time is right. I thank you very much for your consideration. And sir, I hope they put you to work on this, okay? No offense, because you're the one that has, or your department has to write it out. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any additional person wishing to come forward and speak? If not, we'll close it and bring it back to the board. At this time, we're on the consent calendar. Is there anyone on the panel wishing to pull anything, or may I ask for a motion?
Motion to approve consent calendar.
Is there a second?
I will second that.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? It's passed. We now will go to the scheduled matters of 9 a.m. and the board sitting as the redevelopment agency, we will call the meeting to order. The consent calendar, which includes the approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make sure that the minutes reflect the fact that Supervisor Withrow was present and not Supervisor Grover was present.
Oh, okay.
I think one of the versions you got showed Supervisor Grover being present.
Okay, thank you. That'll be corrected.
He's a handsome version of Jeff.
Oh, that's not nice.
Jeez. Okay. So, motion to approve the minutes.
Okay. Second?
Second, yeah.
Those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed? Passed. That included the minutes and the correspondence. There's none. Public hearing, there's none. Agenda items, at this time, Kirk Ford.
Yes, good morning. If you recall, last June when the state adopted its budget, they adopted a couple of trailer bills called AB1X26 and AB1X27 related to redevelopment agencies. And as the governor signed those into law, basically as of June 29th, 2011, all new redevelopment activities were suspended until certain activities took place, either in compliance with AB126 or AB1X27. 26 was basically the Dissolution Act. It said redevelopment agencies throughout the state, you're dead, you can't cease to exist, you cease to exist, you can no longer do any redevelopment activities. AB1X27 basically said, well, maybe not. If you pay the state your fair share of $1.7 billion as a ransom, you might be able to stay alive. Well, on June 18th, 2011, right after that was passed, the California Redevelopment Association and the League of Cities filed suit. They took it direct to the Supreme Court. They did not go into the lower courts. And on August 11th of 2011, the Supreme Court agreed to hear it and issued a partial stay on the activities of the legislature and the governor. They partially stayed some portions of AB1X26, and they stayed all of the portions of AB1X27. 127, remember, was the one that said we could pay our fair share and stay alive. 26 was the one that said you're dead. So we had planned for next week to come before both the Board of Supervisors and this redevelopment agency to take very specific actions to implement ABX 1X27, which would have kept the redevelopment agency alive for at least a couple of years. We think we had the money to be able to pay that. But since the Supreme Court stayed all of the activities associated with AB 1X27, we're not going to be able to do that next week. Instead, we're here today. Last week, last Thursday, the Supreme Court clarified the stay to give us a little bit more detail about how to go about implementing the portions of AB 26 that are still in effect. Basically, they said that there is a requirement for each agency to adopt an enforceable obligation schedule, which basically lists all of the obligations of the agency by August 28th. At a public meeting, and that's why we're here today. And I want to thank the CEO's office and the board clerk for helping us last week get this thing on the agenda today in a short order because of the Supreme Court's actions. The enforceable obligation schedule basically lists all of the obligations of the agency, and it is subject to approval by the California Department of Finance. Our agency's enforceable obligations include our bonds and loans, payments required by the federal government, or pre-existing obligations to the state, obligations imposed by state law, judgments and settlements binding on the agency, and any contracts or agreements we have that are necessary for the continued operation of the agency. You've been provided a list or a copy of our enforceable obligation schedule. It includes the Salida storm drain loan, the Keys allocation bonds, and Cal HFA loan, employee salaries, administration costs, contracts for legal services, our housing rehabilitation for the housing Habitat for Humanity and Housing Authority. There's also other obligations, which include our various pass-throughs to other taxing entities, our housing set-aside fund, and we also included the $2.6 million payment this year to the state, and if AB 1X27 goes in there. Additionally, we've included the obligation for our public works agreement that would continue construction of the airport neighborhood, Parkland neighborhood, and Empire neighborhood projects that we had adopted last spring. So our total enforceable obligations total $93 million over the life of the agency. They also require us to identify what's due this calendar year, and that's about $15.7 million. So our total enforceable obligations this year are $15.7 million. So while the stay is in effect, the agency cannot make any payments. We can't pay off our loans or we can't do any of those things unless we have listed it in our adopted enforceable obligation schedule. That's what we have today. The Supreme Court has also said that they intend to decide the case pertaining to all redevelopment agencies by January 15th of 2012. So we hope they get it done sooner than that so we'll know where we stand. Staff has two recommendations for the agency today. One is to adopt the attached enforceable obligation payment schedule in compliance with AB 1X26, and also direct the executive director, me, to take all actions necessary to implement AB 1X26, including transmitting this document to the appropriate locations. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions from any of the board members? If not, I'll open to the public. Any concerns on this issue? If no one's come forward, I'll bring it back to the board.
Mr. Chairman, I truly hope Supreme Court does find that this AB 1X27 is unconstitutional and we can't pay the ransom money in order to keep our redevelopment agency alive, which has done some really good things in Santa Claus County and will stand to do some more good things. But in saying that, I think we need to approve both the staff recommendations so that way we're in good standing once this decision comes out. So I'll make the motion to approve both the staff recommendations.
Yeah, I agree with Bill. I wonder if the Supreme Court does rule in favor of the counties, what that does to the state's budget and where they will get their next pound of flesh when they can't get it from this. I wonder what our next, I wonder if in the end we're gonna end up paying it anyway, one way or another.
Well, as we've seen in the past, if Plan A doesn't work, the state will go back. This isn't their first attempt at redevelopment funding. they'll go back and try to develop a plan that will allow them to legally access these funds. So we don't think that the war is over, even though we may win this battle.
Part of that answer is, if you notice on the budget, there were three tiers. If they did not receive a certain amount of money, it dropped down to tier one, they'd take additional money, tier two, additional money, and tier three, even more money. So that is part of what they put in there.
That's a good
in
point.
Addition. So that, I think you can look forward to that if it does arrive. Any more comments? Yes.
I just had one. I thought Prop 22 settled this last year when we said that the state couldn't take any portion of redevelopment money, and now they've come and tried to take it all. I don't see how the court can do anything but rule in our favor in a lawsuit that the League of Cities brought. Our only choice, as I see it here today, is to accept these staff recommendations and go forward with the redevelopment agencies or completely dissolve the redevelopment agency, and I don't want to do that. Our redevelopment agencies, unlike some places, has done just major infrastructure projects. We've done sewer systems. We've done storm drains primarily. And this is what redevelopment agencies are supposed to do. There's been a lot of abuse of these agencies in the coastal areas. But in our case, I think we've done just exactly what it was intended to do. So I'm in favor of the staff recommendations also. And I will second that motion from Supervisor O'Brien.
Any other comment? It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Passed.
Thank you.
We have a public hearing which agenda items which are covered. Now we have public forum covered, and this meeting now is adjourned. We now will go to scheduled matters at 9:05. A public hearing on consideration and introduction of first reading of the ordinance of the boundaries for Stanislaus County Supervisional Districts. Rick Robinson.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Monteith, members of the board. This is the second public hearing on the redistricting effort that's been underway since about January and the ninth public meeting in total. Those nine meetings occurring between June and today. We will be providing you an abbreviated version of the presentation that we made last week, just to hit some of the highlights and to display for you the recommended maps. I once again want to recognize and acknowledge our advisory committees, steering committees, and project committees, even though I won't introduce them by name today. I do want to express my appreciation to you. I will note that we did receive one written comment, of which I am aware, this week from the City of Ceres, expressing a preference for option one in your packet, and that letter is in your packets this morning for your review. The process that we followed leads us to this day, August 23rd. It's a date that we had penned and identified clear back in the early spring as our target date to present to you for your hopefully final consideration redistricting proposals that have been recommended by the steering committee and ad hoc advisory committee. I want to also express to County Council my appreciation for the extraordinary work that he has done in Public Works, for the extraordinary work that they have done in developing the legal descriptions and the findings necessary to allow this action to go forward today as an ordinance. And to Poe and Aaron, Aaron is not able to be here today. Poe is in the audience for the outstanding work they've done in assisting us in developing the maps that you will be looking at today, and that we will, if you approve one of the three options, be living with for the next 10 years. So thank you very much.
Hi, good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doering. My name is David Jones with the Chief Executive Office. It's a privilege to be able to give you an abbreviated presentation on the report that was presented in detail last week on supervisorial redistricting. By way of review, the Board of Supervisors is required every 10 years by code to adjust its district boundaries. The criteria being each district is to be as nearly equal in population as may be, and the U.S. Census data is used as the foundation for the project. There was a citizen redistricting committee as well as a steering committee that worked together to prepare options and prepared and submitted a draft report, actually the final report on redistricting on August 1st. Staff has conducted a detailed presentation of the redistricting process before your board on August 16th last week. By way of review, the total Stanislaus County population, according to the U.S. Census for 2010, is 514,453. That brings us to an ideal population per district of 102,891. And your board had directed the different committees that were working on the project to use a plus or minus 2% in bringing options for the district boundaries. As we'll see by way of review, some of our districts, according to the 2010 census, were overpopulated by nearly 11,000. Some were underpopulated by as far as 11,178. So there was a wide spread of, I think more than 24% was the swing in populations between the districts. So that was the starting place for the groups working on the boundary lines. As you'll recall, 7 public meetings were held throughout this process, with a total of 59 people attending. That did not include the public hearing last week here before your board. There were a total of 26 comments received at the public meetings. We had 3 comments during the period of time received via email. Chairman Robinson referred to the letter that we've also received. That would bring our total comments up to 30, including the comment received this week. At each of the public meetings, information and handouts were available in English and Spanish. Translation service was available at each meeting for public comment. If necessary, we provided basic instruction on redistricting, and public comment was received. And this was more than double the amount of public meetings from the 2001 redistricting process. All the meeting comments were tracked in several forms, electronic notes typed from verbal comment. People that filled out public comment forms, those were logged and scanned electronically. Also, maps were drawn, physical maps of communities of interest as they were presented at these meetings. And all of the comments and information has been logged in the GIS system and retained there electronically. The Redistricting Steering Committee and the Ad Hoc Citizen Redistricting Advisory Committee approved 3 recommended maps. And those were Option 1, Option 2, and Option 2 Alternative. And those were reviewed in detail last week. By way of quick review of the maps, Option 1 did come within the 2% population balancing. This was a recommended map. And we'll go into just quick detail in here, but you can see the basic shape with the county boundaries. And of note for this will be the significant difference here is District 5 moving into the Empire area, which we'll take a quick look at. By way of reference, there were some boundary line adjustments for population balancing in several different areas. We talked last week about the push-down pop-up theory. Wherever you would make a change in population, that pushes back somewhere else. So it was a very tenuous process in terms of moving boundary lines. But of significant note in this, along with the number of communities of interest that were able to be accommodated, the most distinct change in this option one is with District 5 being able to retain all of Ceres and its sphere of influence within one district. But also District 5 does move up through the Airport District, the Beard Tract, and does encompass the Empire Municipal Advisory Council area as well. Also of note in this option is District 3 moves significantly across the Tuolumne River, and the South Modesto Municipal Advisory Council, or the South Modesto MAC, now becomes part of District 3. Moving on to option 2, which is recommended as well, we see it's well within the population guidelines of plus or minus 2%. And we'll see some similar boundary changes here for population balancing. And overall, this option you'll see is a little bit more compact, and we'll go into a little bit closer detail here as well. It's a little more compact than option one in terms of District 5. Again, you'll see some boundary changes for population balancing. As we discussed in detail last week, a significant number of community of interest issues were taken care of in this option as well. Of note, between option two and option one, in option two that we're looking at now, we see that District 5 is more compact. It does not run up through the airport, through Beard, into Empire. We see that also in this option that District 5 has the boundaries of the South Modesto MAC that are contained within its district. That's more than 14,000 people. So we see District 2 is for the most part on the opposite side of the Tuolumne River and comes over a little bit for population balancing. What's of note in this option, option 2, is that for Ceres, most of Ceres population is contained within District 5, but there are about 3,700, slightly over 3,700 people that would move into District 4. And we'll also see that this part of the Ceres sphere of influence is contained in District 2. And there are about 720 people in this part of the sphere of influence. And so while this is more compact in this option, we see that Ceres has three supervisors that will have parts of Ceres in their district. As we move on to option two alternative, which we reviewed in detail last week as well, we'll see that it is within the plus or minus 2%. District 5 is just under 2%, as we see here. Oops. Actually, we'll go to kind of our global map. We'll see it's very, very similar in shape to option two, and we'll push in on the detail and see this a little bit more closely. One of the things that we'll start with in terms of a difference between option two alternative and option one, we were able to move the supervisorial district line to match the school district boundaries here. In option two, we picked up only part of that, and we did not do additional line cleanup on that. And so in option two alternative, what we've done is a minor modification that matches option one now, which brings this Stanislaus-Sylvan school district line as the border between the two supervisorial districts. So it's a minor line cleanup that we did there. Also an option two alternative, I'll push in a little bit more here. As you'll remember from last week, we had discovered that part of the Houston school district was actually split off from the rest of the district in option two. And so when we became aware of this in option two alternative, we've been able to take this portion, which is Houston School District, and reunify it with the rest of the Houston District. So this is not split off into a separate supervisorial district now. One of the other changes in option two alternative is something that we saw in option one, but was not in option two. And that is in option one, the sphere of influence in this southeast section and southern portion of Ceres, the sphere of influence was included in District 5. In option 2, this portion of the sphere was included in District 2. And that was one of the things that helped split Ceres into three supervisorial districts. What we did in option 2A, which we're looking at right now, is we took this sphere of influence and moved it from District 2 back into District 5. Which now means that there would be two supervisorial districts representing Ceres in the Ceres sphere. And this was about 720 people in terms of the population. And that did move it up to 1.98% in terms of population threshold, but it was underneath the 2%. Also based on feedback from last week's board meeting, there was a question in regard to the Empire Municipal Advisory Council. And actually there was a good find in that part of the Empire MAC was in District 4, and it has been moved into District 1. So the Salida MAC is now reunified as a whole and not split. And it's this area where the hand is traveling, and there's zero population in there, so there were no population impacts of doing this. This was, again, some line cleanup that has taken place to make sure the MAC is unified. And so those would be the four changes that you would see between option 2 and option 2 alternative. Option 2 alternative makes the line change for the Sylvan-Stanislaus school district does the cleanup there. Does the cleanup on the Houston school district that we saw, adds the sphere of influence into District 5 to lower the number of districts that now contain portions of Ceres. And then the final change was doing the line cleanup on the Empire MAC, which had no population impact. So those would be the major changes that we see, or the differences between alternative 2A and alternative 2. And with that, staff is bringing three recommendations to your board today. Recommendation number 1 is to open a public hearing to accept public testimony regarding supervisorial redistricting. The second recommendation is to approve and select a redistricting option and make appropriate findings regarding the adjustment of the boundaries for supervisorial districts. And the third staff recommendation is to introduce, waive the first reading, and approve an ordinance adjusting the boundaries of the supervisorial districts in accordance with the selected redistricting option. And with that, I'll ask if there are any questions and turn it to the board.
Any questions by board members? If not, then I will open it to the public, public comment. Anyone wishing to speak on this subject? Please come forward and state your name, please.
Good morning, Chairman and Supervisors. Chris Vieira, Mayor for the City of Ceres. I did want to acknowledge the letter that the city did send in regarding our preference for alternative 1. We have a significant area of interest in North Ceres that we would prefer to keep as part of intact with the remaining portion of the city. So nothing new that I haven't said before, but I would like to urge you that our recommendation would be that you would adopt option number 1. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional comment, please step forward. State your name, please.
Good morning. I'm Robert Rubin with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. On behalf of residents of Park Lawn, we strongly recommend that you adopt option 2A. While I hear the concerns of the mayor of Ceres about splitting the city, I think there's a more serious issue that potentially implicates the Voting Rights Act, which is the situation with Park Lawn, in which they would be taken out of District 5 under option 1, and they have enjoyed a very close and constructive working relationship with Supervisor DeMartini, and that would, of course, be lost. To compound the problem, as you're well aware, the residents of Park Lawn are disenfranchised from any city representation as an unincorporated area, and so the relationship that they have with the board is the only government, local government relationship that they enjoy. And they have, as I say, had a very constructive relationship with Supervisor DeMartini, and they would very strongly desire to remain in that district, District 5. So we are, on behalf of the community, strongly recommending option 2A.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any additional comments?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, CEO, and members of the Board of Supervisors. Noe Bottomo, California Rural Legal Assistance Foundation. I'm back again and glad that you're taking this seriously. And I appreciated the comments that were made about transparency of the process. 20 years ago, it wasn't like this. It was done behind closed doors. So my comments were done in reference to how the decisions were being made 20 years ago when the community was outside that process and the community yet was giving input as to how it wanted the lines drawn. Unfortunately, the community's input never came to be 20 years ago. And the maps were drawn a different way. So in that reference, you've opened it up. You have a committee, You listen to the committee has come up with two recommendations. And while not the most perfect, I think they tried, I talked to Mr. Jones here, as diligently as they could, looking at the numbers, you came up with these two maps. You've heard testimony about supporting alternative two from representation from the residents of Park Lawn, so they would keep their community of interest intact and working with the representatives. The other thing I also was looking at was the population in these specific communities, specifically communities of color. Latino communities, Southeast Asian communities are different diverse communities. I was able to obtain the data, thanks to Mr. Jones, on the Latino voting age, and that showed where the districts are. So you're looking at which one to go, one or two, and they both have their pros and cons with that. Unfortunately, we could not look at the citizen voting age data for those communities of color. I would have liked to have seen that and see how the numbers would show, but we are lacking that, so we have what we have. So appreciate the process, good luck, and 10 years from now, we'll see if we're still here and looking at new numbers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. If there are any additional comments.
I would like to just make one point of clarification. While the citizen age voting information is interesting information, it is not relevant to your decision, and you're actually prohibited from considering it in drawing your district lines. Your role and responsibility is to follow the Voting Rights Act and the Elections Code as it relates to the allocation of population throughout Stanislaus County, and most specifically the criteria that are established in both state and federal guidelines.
If there are no more comments, I'll bring it back to the board. Ask for a motion, a discussion. Supervisor O'Brien.
Yeah, not ready to give you a motion yet, Mr. Chairman, but I do have some comments. First, again, I think you'll hear many of us or all of us thank the committee who served to put these maps together. And the reason we are thanking you so much is because of all the time you put into this. This was a huge task, and we appreciate all your hard work, each and every one of you. So thank you again for your hard work. As we look at the three options before us today, I'll tell you option two is completely off the table for me. And I appreciate the changes that two alternative were taken into account for, specifically the cleanup of the school district boundaries in District 1 and District 4 at the top of the county, and also to get the third supervisor out of the city of Ceres sphere. That only makes sense. Last week I made comments that revealed, I guess, one of my cards, but today's the rest of the deck. Yeah, I did make comments about Ceres, and I still think that's very important that Ceres remains in one supervisor district. It's a community of interest. There's lots of pros and cons between both option one and option 2A. Biggest one for District 1 is the town of Empire, and I strongly believe Empire should stay within District 1. As do I feel that way about the Beard Industrial Tract. District 1 has served Beard Industrial Tract for many decades, and due to the compactive issue, it has pulled out of District 1. It's got a population of nearly zero, and so it's tough to see leaving District 1. That's one of the big differences between the two maps. In option one, the three major industrial areas of the unincorporated area of the county all fall within one supervisor. Currently, it's within three supervisors. Option 2A would put it into two supervisors. So I thought that was important to look at. Seeing District 4 jump across the river in option number 2A doesn't make sense to me. Option 2A also, District 1 goes from the largest district as far as population is concerned to the smallest district as population is concerned. Option 1 is better balanced. The plus and minus percentages are very small. And I talked last week about the compact versus community of interest. So bottom line is there's pros and cons with both maps. I think we could debate this all day, but I can go for either map.
Supervisor DeMartini.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I would like to also thank the redistricting committee who really spent many hours in traveling all around the county trying to work up a redistricting map that made some sense. And I think they've put a lot of hard work into this. And they've kept communities of interest together. And so I just want to make the comments on the differences in the map. First of all, I want to say I'm glad that the in both options that the west side, which is west of the San Joaquin River, has all been kept intact, and that's the way it really needs to be. The main difference is South Modesto continuing in District 5, which I spent a lot of time in South Modesto, and we're making some progress there, and I'd like to stay there. Probably the only negative there is that Ceres there's a new section of Ceres that's added to District 5 and then another section that's taken out. And in a perfect world, it would be nice to have all of Ceres, but when you move the lines around, even to take in that 3,700 people, then it throws the other districts out of kilter. And if we have to stay within 2%, you just really can't do it. I've never had all of Ceres in the past anyway, but what's different is that it would take in a new section of Ceres and take out an old section. Ideally, I'd like to have all of Ceres, but it just numbers just don't work out. And looking at the maps, I don't think it makes a lot of sense for District 5 to go into Empire. I used to live outside of Empire, and I'm nothing against Empire, but going from Newman to Empire is a pretty long distance, and keeping the district more compact, keeping South Modesto together is, I think, better for me, better for the residents of the area. The only thing that I didn't like was that part of Ceres was it had to be moved out, and that's just unfortunate. But Ceres has, for as long as I can remember, always had two supervisors, and I think it's going to stay that way this time. So I appreciate everything that the redistricting committee has done. I think you put a lot of work into this. And I played around with the numbers and the maps myself, I think they've done a good job on this. For me, option 2A is what I would support today. Those reasons.
Any other comments by members of the board? I merely would like to say once again thank you for the work done. I use the analogy as like dealing with a balloon. You squeeze the top, it pops out the bottom. You squeeze the bottom, it pops out the side. So I do want to commend you for the work you've done, and we thank you. Is there a motion?
You know, I'm just going to make a comment here, if I could, one more. I prefer option 2A here today. First, I want to thank you guys for everything you've done. A ton of hard work, and I'm glad I wasn't doing it. I'm sure it was not fun, but we appreciate, just to reiterate what everybody said here. When I look at option 1, what it does to District 5 just doesn't make sense. It makes it difficult, you know, to go from Newman to Empire. And cross over the Tuolumne, you know, I just don't think that works as far as option 1. Option 2A, I think, makes more sense between districts 3 and 4 to use Tully as a line going up. I think that makes sense. And as far as Ceres is concerned, I don't think there's any perfect solution here for Ceres. You know, I think part of the problem is kind of in the county, the contiguous kind of Modesto Ceres is where all the population is. And just as Modesto has three supervisors, you know, it's hard to not have two supervisors in Ceres. And I think in option 2A, we end up with 93% of Ceres population in one supervisor's district. So anyway, there's no easy answer here, like everybody has said. And if it was, anyway, I would prefer 2A, and I thank you guys for everything you've done. So,
anyone caring to make a motion this time? Or yes, would you like to
comment? I better comment really quickly. I'm sorry. I also want to thank the extraordinary work that's been done by our staff, David Jones, extraordinary work internally, but more specifically the Citizens Advisory Committee. Not only have you brought us two maps that there's been very little discussion on, but you've you've kept integrity in the process, and we heard that today, and that's what I really appreciate being an elected official. We've taken pretty much a hands-off approach, although we do have the decision today. And also Rick Robinson, our CEO, for leading county staff. Mr. Jones said it earlier about the push-down pop-up theory, because we had an opportunity after maps 1 and 2, options 1 and 2 came out, to kind of play with the map, and it's way beyond me. That proves the extraordinary effort, because I couldn't make the little adjustments I thought were necessary. I mean, the school district and things like that. Today, it comes down to two things, it seems to me. It's either keeping Ceres whole or putting Supervisor DeMartini in a position that he goes from Newman all the way to Empire. I think the changes on both maps are logical and can be explained out. As I've said all along, I didn't think that my boundary would change much, so I've been watching the other boundaries, listening to the other supervisors, generally to try and make my decision, because mine has been left largely intact. And I did represent part of Ceres last time. I had that portion that Supervisor DeMartini's picking up. I do believe that having two representatives is better than one. I know that the mayor disagrees with that, but I think if I was in that position, I would take it. So I'm more inclined to to have a more compact district for District 5. I think that's what it boils down to for me. So I'm going to be supporting, and I agree with Supervisor O'Brien, option 2 is out, 2 alternative is in with option 1, and I'm going to be supporting option 2 alternative today. And I would make a motion in support of option 2 alternative.
Is there a second?
Yeah, I would second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to accept the three recommendations. Okay, at this time, County Council.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that motion would be to open the public hearing and accept public testimony regarding the supervisorial redistricting, which you have done. Second, it would approve and select redistricting option 2 alternative, and to make appropriate findings regarding the adjustment of the boundaries for supervisorial districts. Regarding those findings, we would recommend that you make the following findings, is that based on the staff report for today's public hearing and the staff report for the public hearing held on August 16th, 2011, including the supervisorial redistricting project report to the Board of Supervisors submitted jointly by the Redistricting Steering Committee and the Ad Hoc Citizen Redistricting Advisory Committee dated August 16, 2011, and on the presentations made by staff at both public hearings, including PowerPoint presentations, on all the comments and testimony received during both public hearings and all the comments received during the public meetings on June 13, 14, 15, 28, 29, 30, and July 20, all of which was taken into consideration in making a decision to select a redistricting option, the Board of Supervisors makes the following findings in support of option 2 alternative. 1, 7 public meetings were held to receive public input and comment about adjusting the boundaries of supervisorial districts, at which there were 59 public attendees and 26 comments received. 3 additional comments about redistricting were received by email. 3, extensive outreach was conducted to notify residents about the public meetings through a variety of media, including news releases, print advertisements, promotional email notifications, and briefings. 4, advertisements and notices were published in English and Spanish language translation was available for public comment during each public meeting, and materials were made available in English and Spanish at the public meetings. 5, each public meeting and the August 16, 2011 public hearing included educational information about the redistricting project, which included presentation of applicable laws, standards, and terminology to facilitate effective participation by the public in the redistricting project. Six, the board finds that the redistricting steering committee and the ad hoc citizen redistricting advisory committee fully and carefully considered public comment when jointly adjusting supervisorial district boundaries and faithfully applied the criteria set forth in Elections Code Section 21500. Seven, the board has reviewed and considered redistricting option one, option two, and option two alternative, and the board officially adopts option two alternative. Eight, the board finds that redistricting option one, option two, and option two alternative all substantially meet the criteria set forth in California Election Code Section 21500, and each is in compliance with applicable laws and case decisions regarding redistricting supervisorial district boundaries, and that option two alternative best meets the redistricting criteria and guidelines. Nine, the board considered and acknowledged that the criteria of one person, one vote is the criteria of paramount interest, so that supervisorial districts were nearly equal in population, and that option two alternative met the goal of plus or minus 2% deviation in population among the districts. 10, the board also gave strong consideration in adjusting supervisorial districts to the factors set forth in Elections Code Section 21500 of topography, geography, cohesiveness, contiguity, integrity, and compactness of territory and communities of interest, and finds that option two alternative substantially follows those criteria. 11, the board finds that option two alternative is based on a rational policy which was to substantially achieve equality in populations among the five supervisorial districts and balance the criteria set forth in Election Code Section 21500. 12, the board finds that option two alternative achieves the best balance of keeping communities of interest intact, including cities, school districts, municipal advisory councils, and recognized public interest groups, and utilizes topographic and geographic boundaries such as natural boundaries and roadways. 13, the board finds that option two alternative does not operate to minimize or cancel out the voting strength of racial or political elements of the voting population. 14, the board finds that there is no dilution of voting strength of any particular group by the adoption of option two alternative. 15, the board finds that option two alternative followed natural or man-made geographical features as boundaries and utilized census block to establish the supervisorial districts. 16, the board finds that the factors set forth in Election Code Section 21500 are a rational basis for this insignificant deviation from exact equality of population among the supervisorial districts, and that such consideration justifies the insignificant departure from achieving exact equality in population among the districts. 17, the board finds that the insignificant disparity in population between the supervisorial districts established by option two alternative does not result in denial of equal protection. 18, the board finds that option two alternative boundaries are squared off and are clear for members of the public to understand and creates easily identifiable district boundaries. 19, the board finds that the Beard Industrial Tract is most closely associated with the City of Modesto community of interest, and that option one would result in the Beard Industrial Tract moving into Supervisorial District 5, which is most closely associated with the west side of Stanislaus County, and that option two alternative keeps the Beard Industrial Tract with the City of Modesto community of interest. 20, the board finds that the community of Empire is most closely associated with the east side of Stanislaus County, that option one results in Empire moving into Supervisorial District 5 that historically has been associated with the west side of Stanislaus County, and that option two alternative keeps Empire in Supervisorial District 1 associated with the east side of the county. 21, the board finds that option two alternative is identical to option two, except that option two alternative incorporates modest boundary changes to conform the supervisorial district boundaries with the Sylvan Union School District, Stanislaus Union School District, Houston Unified School District, and the City of Ceres sphere of influence, which results in those communities of interest remaining in one supervisorial district. 22, the board finds that the options rejected from consideration did not substantially meet the criteria set forth in Elections Code Section 21500, in that option A split the South Modesto Municipal Advisory Council, thereby significantly diluting the political influence of a large and important community of interest, in that option B split the communities of Grayson and Wesley from the West Side community of interest, and in that option C resulted in a substantial shift in Latino voting age population that could be perceived as diluting the Latino vote in supervisorial District 3 and District 4. 23, the board finds that based on all of the available documents, information, and comments on and testimony, that option 2 alternative best meets the applicable guidelines and factors, including legal precedents, that should be considered when adjusting supervisorial district boundaries, best achieves a balance between equal populations among the districts and the factors set forth in Elections Code Section 21500, and best achieves the objective of effective representation in each of the supervisorial districts established under option 2 alternative. Finally, the motion would include the act to introduce, waive the first reading, and approve an ordinance adjusting the boundaries of supervisorial districts in accordance with the selected redistricting option.
Thank you. Then, as so read, we have a motion that has been seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? It is passed. We will now go to correspondence.
I would like to, as they breathe a collective sigh of relief, thank the Citizens Advisory Committee for your outstanding work, and Project Steering Committee for the excellent work that you've done. Thank you so much.
Well done.
This board has received a notice from the Surface Transportation Board regarding the granting of City of Modesto's request for an extension of the negotiation period for the interim trail use rail banking agreement with Union Pacific Railroad Company for the abandoned 5.118-mile line of railroad known as the McHenry Industrial Lead.
Referred to the Department of Public Works.
This board has received a copy of the annual report of the 2009-10 from the California State Board of Equalization.
Acknowledge receipt of the report.
This board has received a letter from the California Wildlife Conservation Board regarding their consideration of a grant to River Partners to assist with the acquisition of approximately 1,603 acres of land for the preservation and enhancement of wildlife habitat located in Stanislaus County.
Referred to the Fish and Wildlife Committee, the Department of Planning and Community Development, the Department of Public Works, and the Agricultural Commissioner, and the Sealer of Weight and Measures.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims referred to the Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. At this time, anyone from the Board of Supervisors have any report?
Mr. Chairman, I do. Today, the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District has called their very first air alert day. That's going to run through at least Friday, possibly even to Saturday. The Air Pollution Control District urges everybody to try to reduce the miles you travel in your car. Try to carpool. Don't use the drive-through lane at the fast food restaurants, and do everything you can to reduce the amount you drive. What this is part of the $29 million fine that this valley has on it, which we all pay with a $12 increase in our DMV fees. If we can go three consecutive summers without a violation of the one-hour ozone standard that is no longer in place, we then can get rid of the $29 million fine. So just be aware of these air alerts. See what you can do to do your part to try to get rid of this $29 million fine.
Are there any more reports? If not, we'll go to the Legislative, Physical, and Management Report. Chief Executive Officer.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Monteith. A quick note, if I may back up to the correspondence we received. I just wanted to comment on the Wildlife Conservation Board item that you had sent back. This is actually a project that the Board of Supervisors is on record as supporting, as it will ultimately enhance the Tuolumne River corridor, that improvements that are part of our long-range vision. The project is at the confluence of the Tuolumne River and the San Joaquin River, and should, over the long term, really enhance the connectivity and improve recreational opportunities for residents of Stanislaus County. On the legislative side, legislature is set to return next Monday. Realignment and redevelopment bill cleanups seem to be front and center for the legislature. We have some pretty significant concern relative to the budget triggers that have been actually earlier identified by the chair in comments, which could adversely affect funding in Stanislaus County and other cities and counties throughout California, based on the most recent report issued, I believe, by the State Comptroller's Office of revenues lagging by about $500 million. As you recall, the revenue targets that have been identified, if not met, will put into motion processes that will result in reduction in funding in a number of programs that benefit residents of Stanislaus County. That's all I have for now.
The Board of Supervisors, sitting as the Stanislaus County In-Home Supportive Service Public Authority, we will call it to order. Public forum. We have. Is there any public comment? I bring back to the board, and then it is adjourned, and then we have a closed session.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have closed session to have conference with labor negotiator. The agency negotiator is Richard Robinson. The labor organization is United Domestic Workers. This is held pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. We do not expect a report out on that matter.
Do you have the additional?
Yeah. And then adjourn the IHSS meeting and then reopen the board meeting.
We'll adjourn the IHSS meeting and reopen the Board of Supervisors meeting.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we also have matter for the Board of Supervisors to consider in closed session: conference with legal counsel to discuss significant exposure to litigation, one case related to the claim filed by R. Michael Williams, held pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision B, with a further subdivision, capital B. And we do not expect to report out on that matter as well.
Board of Supervisors meeting is now closed.